Welcome to FemTech at Work, the podcast where we explore the intersection of technology, health, and women's empowerment in the workplace. Hosted by me, Maaike Steinebach. This show will dive into the innovative solutions transforming women's health and well-being in the workplace. Join us as we chat with FemTech founders, industry leaders, and change makers who are pioneering advancements in FemTech and women's health. We discuss everything: menstrual health, reproductive rights, menopause, but also the challenges women face in the workplace and how innovation can overcome them. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting your FemTech journey, FemTech at Work is here to inspire and inform you about the future of health and wellness for women everywhere. Tune in and be part of the conversation. Welcome to today's episode of FemTech at Work with a very special guest today, Chris Bowden, who is the head of global partnerships at Cathay Cargo. Thank you so much for joining me today. You are my first male guest. I'm very, very excited, but you're such an incredible champion for women's health that I really wanted to have you on this podcast and to also give you the credit that you deserve for being such a male ally. Can you share with me what inspired you to become an ally for women's health?
Sure. I'm very excited to be doing the podcast first off. And I think a lot of the challenges that we face around allyship is finding the right platforms to connect with people. So this is a great, great opportunity to do that. My kind of allyship journey, I've got a couple of stories of inspiration, if you like. But when I was quite young, there's a scheme in the UK where I grew up called the Duke of Edinburgh's Award. Requires you the highest level of that award. It requires you to spend time overseas working on a residential project. So at the age of 15, I went to Kenya for 2 weeks to work with streets.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really formative experience. And the 2 weeks were spent on a rehabilitation camp for street kids. So that's kind of teach very basic topics, including education, but also things like sanitation, and then trying to help reintegrate these kids back into their homes and back into their families. On that trip, it's a harrowing story, but I met a girl who at the time would have been, I think, around 11, 12, and she had spent a couple of years on the streets and had made her living essentially by prostituting herself. At the age of 15 and having led a relatively sheltered life in the UK, I couldn't understand how someone somewhere else in the world could go through that experience at the same time as I was living a very comfortable, safe life at home with my family. And it really hit and made me want to be involved initially in the NGO space. And at the time, not specifically around women, but obviously that experience kind of pushed me into wanting to be involved more. And then later there was another scenario that affected me a little bit more with my own personal circumstances, links into allyship and privilege, if you like. I went to a British comprehensive school and my peers in the professional world tend to have gone to private schools. Paid education. And I remember having a discussion with a HR person who said, do you know, the thing is, Chris, it's in your favor that you didn't go to a private school. And I asked, and he said, the reason is because we don't expect as much of you as we do of them.
Oh, wow.
I was deeply offended by it. It made me think that there's an inherent privilege, which you often have zero control over, whether it's male privilege, it's white privilege, whether it's wealth privilege. And the trick to life is trying to use that privilege to the benefit of those who don't have it and can't really think of a bigger calling. But those two incidents really kind of stand out in my mind as inspiration for getting involved in allyship.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, I can imagine that has had a profound impact on your way of thinking. So as a champion of women's health, and you're also obviously in a leadership position in your organization, what are you hoping in over time? What would great look like for your company to support women, particularly on their health journey?
Yeah. So I'm going to try and make sure I talk about women's health more, but there's bigger picture thing, which is just around supporting women anyway. And there's lots of points of inspiration in the corporate world. And there's a hell of a lot of progress over the last 20, 30 years in terms of recognizing equality and equity and the need for diversity. But great to me is actually a world where ERGs, resource groups that have a focus on equity or diversity, no longer need to exist. living in a system where people are not recognized for privilege, but also not held back by any lack of privilege within a system.
Yeah.
On the women's health front, if I think about Cathay and Cathay Cargo, it's hoping the starting steps of what we've done around menopause and menstruation, childcare, maternity, really become cemented and improved from where they are. And by improved, I don't necessarily mean the material benefit that we ascribe to it, but I mean the kind of cultural understanding of why it's important and why it needs to be in place. And I think a lot of our challenges at the minute are around that cultural understanding. So great would be when we no longer have to explain the reason that we do the things we want to do.
Yes, exactly. So you operate obviously in a traditionally very male-dominated industry, right? Aviation, logistics. So talking about that culture, what are then kind of the key challenges that you need to overcome? And I'm totally fine if you just talk about diversity in general, because I appreciate that you're starting even from a bigger point backwards than maybe some other industries or companies.
Yeah. When you look at aviation, which is quite split on its gender makeup, cargo and air freight is much more male-dominated as an ecosystem than general aviation. So the big challenge that we have is in Cathay Cargo is trying to bring a balance into our workforce. We have a good balance within the back office teams. When you look at our service delivery teams, shift workers, flight crew, engineering teams, that's where the balance really falls off and it's very strongly in favor of men. And the challenge, it's multiple. Right? Part of that issue is that the industry is seen as a male-dominated industry. So our biggest challenge is trying to change the narrative and introduce young women to air freight.
Yep.
And seeing it as a viable career. And then creating the ecosystem that will allow women to thrive.
Yeah.
So if I give a couple of examples of where we've tried to address those challenges. Last year, we produced and issued internally Women in Cargo video, which tracks the supply chain of a traditional flight for Cathay Cargo. But we had women in every decision-making position along that journey.
Oh, wow.
And the idea was that it's possible. You know, there's no reason why those positions need to be male or female. It could be anyone. And then we followed it up with, we actually used it as a feature in the launch of Cathay's Gender Equity Network.
Oh, wow.
And with a panel discussion led by the director cargo, talking about the experience of being a woman in cargo and how we can improve it. So we've tried to raise awareness around issues internally. And then externally, we've tried to work with the Women's Foundation, other companies, other initiatives to bring young women through the cargo ecosystem so that they can get exposure to opportunities early on. But we still have a lot to do around that. And a lot of the challenges come in the form of HR systems and benefits that will basically make the workplace more equitable for women. And in fact, for that is often that the cargo team at Cathay is just one part of Cathay, and Cathay is a very big multinational.
Yes.
And driving HR changes is complicated, costly. It takes time. So we have to navigate through that ecosystem as well.
Yeah.
And if you look at the air freight industry in general, there are a couple of smaller companies who are real outliers in diversity and inclusion, but the majority is quite slow. It follows aviation and it tends to be a follower rather than a leader. So we're kind of battling that broader macroeconomic front as well.
Yeah. So how, and do you think women's health can help you overcome some of these challenges? You spoke briefly about employee benefits, and I know Cathay has implemented a menopause for a policy, for example, and you're doing a lot around menstruation and other areas of women's health. Have you seen a shift or a change within the existing team of appreciation for this? Do you get any feedback on how this is supporting you on this drive to get more diversity into your workforce?
Yeah, we ran a trial earlier this year where we provided menstrual products in the bathrooms on the floor of Cathay Cargo, and then we extended it to provide menstrual products in flight for one of our cargo airlines.
Yeah.
And that was, hopefully it's the precursor to a much bigger rollout, but it was an attempt to A, recognize the challenges around menstruation in the workplace.
Yeah.
B, raise the culture of understanding of what women go through, and then C, force a conversation about menstruation, which is still something of a taboo subject, right? Similar to menopause.
Yes.
And it succeeded in all three of those goals, I think. The kind of quantitative targets and tracking that we put on the trial have helped justify extending it further. the discussion came up numerous times with people asking, well, but why do we need to do this? Why are we doing this? What are we doing for men, for example? And that allowed us to open up a conversation about, well, let's have a chat about equity. We're not talking about equality here. These aren't comparative issues where if we support women going through menstruation, we don't also need to do something for men. Men don't bleed, etc. And then on a general kind of cultural level, it's been great because it's made us stand out within Cathay and within air freight in general as a leader on this. So we then get asked about our contributions and what other ideas we have and what else we can do and how else we can try and drive change. So I think that focus on menstrual products and women's health has really helped. The menopause side of it is also very interesting. The menopause guidelines that we have in place have been in place for a couple of years, but they're often not very well known. So we make as big a deal as we can of trying to support external menopause events.
Yeah.
We also highlight these policies internally, and that's needed a lot of allyship again, but courage from high-powered or high-ranking women in the organization to highlight these guidelines. So kudos to our CFO who prepared to write about her experiences with perimenopause and explain the guidelines are there to help. And that's been great. It's really helped to push the conversation.
Yeah, amazing. And just on the feedback of your trial on the period care products, which I think is amazing. And you mentioned you tried to facilitate the dialogue and to try and get a better understanding from everybody in the organization about why you were doing this. Do you feel these initiatives have helped, particularly maybe also the men, to understand why this is important?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think we're in an environment now where there's quite a lot of pushback against diversity and inclusion. And I mean that in the sense of a global environment, right?
Yes.
There's role models who are in power who you wouldn't really consider to be a role model from a diversity perspective.
Correct, yeah.
So the need to justify what we're doing is probably more important now than ever. And frankly speaking, we encourage feedback. And when we get negative feedback, such as, well, what are you doing for men? That's great because we can have the conversation and we can talk about the inequities that exist. And if you look statistically across Hong Kong and within our organization, men benefit from structural policies and processes that you wouldn't necessarily think about. And then you can tie a conversation of, and by the way, have you thought about what happens when you and your partner have a child and how that impacts her versus how it impacts you and how that system is set up to benefit you more than it does her and how we can change. And something is on the menstruation side of it, as simple as being able to say to somebody, imagine if your period arrives unexpected, you can feel yourself bleeding, leaking, and you're sat at your desk and you're too nervous or embarrassed or shy to get up and go to the bathroom or go to the shop downstairs to buy pads, but you stay at your desk until everyone has left. And giving some really kind of hard-hitting examples of how this can impact not the generic woman, but how it impacts that person in your team who's responsible for this. And if we address that and we make it easier for people and we make sure that people are more understanding of the issue itself, but also that we're providing some kind of solution, imagine the positive benefit for that one person in your team who's responsible for this, right? You get more loyalty, you get better productivity, you get a feeling of security and safety in the workplace that isn't there before. These are really powerful arguments. When you can make that argument and give those examples and show something that's being done to address it, it starts to kind of convince, reinforce, or change the mindsets that predominantly men have. I should add, though, as well, not just men. One of my biggest learnings in the D&I space is that sometimes the people you least expect are the ones who will hold back your initiatives or your drive. So there's a need for kind of cultural awareness and explanation across the entire demographic. Obviously, that is predominantly men or people who have less understanding of the issues, but it's also women, senior execs, etc. It can be quite hard to tackle.
Yeah, thank you so much for raising that point, because that is also very much my experience. And I think part of it is due to the lack of education and normalizing the conversation. I think the other reason is also that some of the women are just like, we already have such a hard time kind of going through that glass ceiling. We don't need other things to be added on for us as well. So quite reluctant to talk about these things in the workplace. But for me, and I feel you're trying to do the same thing, is just let's normalize these conversations around health and well-being. And this can be menstrual health. You know, you're sitting in the office trying to support the fact that you have shame about actually standing up, but also around mental health, right? It's for both men and women. There are so many issues which we still do not talk about in the workplace. And I love the fact that you're obviously having a very progressive CFO who is also role modeling this, because to your point, we need senior people to be vulnerable to talk about these things. And just like you as a male ally, you know, are actually now online with me talking about this stuff is very, very powerful. So how are you encouraging kind of more male allies in your own organizations? And how do you feel we can measure success kind of male allyship and your initiatives kind of in the workplace?
It's a really tricky question. So my first reaction to the question is that success is often difficult to find on the allyship journey. And I think a lot of our experience is depressingly negative. We get beaten back on a lot of initiatives and seeing the progress is quite hard, but maybe there's another way to look at it. So in Cathay, we had a separate male allies network and we had a women's network. And last year we merged that to become the gender equity network.
Very cool.
And the intention of that was that we didn't want two networks trying to achieve similar goals, but working at odds. So we wanted the male allies to be there as an allyship tool to the women's network. And our goal is to push the agenda of gender equity, but obviously with a focus on women. And perhaps the success is in looking at the demographics within Cathay who signed up to join that network. And we've had C-suite execs, we've had directors all the way down in the hierarchy to cabin crew and mechanics in as far away places as Indonesia or the USA have all joined this network. And what we're trying to do is kind of create a pipeline of initiatives that will eventually lead to systemic change. And success is maybe measured by a lot of the data around attendance at the initiatives that we organize, International Women's Day, International Men's Day, World Menopause Day, but also the topics that are raised as a result. So we tend to, a lot of these are marquee events that we have panels, internal panels, where we'll talk about the issues and see what issues are raised. But also maybe the other measures of success are the changes that we've been able to make in the workplace and not necessarily around gender at the moment, but we think of religious diversity. So we have a prayer room in Cathay City, which has only been in place for about 4 years, I think, and was a direct outcome of the employee resource group saying, hey, this needs to be addressed. You've got the menstruation products trial that we did. We've also looked at some systemic trials, such as blinding CVs and assessing whether there is an unconscious bias in our recruitment process. The fact that we can even run those trials is a sign of success. The real sign of success is if we end up getting systemic change built into the way we work. But the kind of day-to-day success, I'd say, is seeing who is involved in the network and who is kind of actively wanting to participate and further the goals of the gender equity network. And one kind of more tangible way, perhaps, is the Women's Foundation in Hong Kong have a great allyship program, which I've gone through a couple of times and have facilitated one. And our intention is to be rolling this out across Cathay as well to try and grow allyship networks. And probably the best sign of success that we will have is how many people sign up for that series and how many of them go on to become facilitators and expand that allyship network within Cathay. And from that kind of grassroots, hopefully the rest of the success factors will form from that.
Amazing. Wow, I'm very impressed. There's a few things I didn't know that I learned today. So thank you so much for sharing that. My next question was going to be, what advice would you have for other male leaders in organizations that would like to become a male ally or would like to do more, let's just call it DEI initiatives, kind of in the workplace? I think you've already given some advice, but what advice would you give them to get started?
In my mind, it's about leadership. And it's a certain type of leadership and it's servile leadership, right? So my kind of base principle for leadership is that I need to create an environment where my team can succeed to the best of their abilities. Mm. You only understand what your team needs by talking to them, and everybody has different needs and their needs are intersectional. My manager outside has different needs because he's a father. My other team member has different needs because she's a new mother. And any point in time, she may be menstruating or going through menopause, right? These are different needs that you have to cater to in order to get the best. And you only learn that by listening and talking to people. So if I think back, the best advice I was ever given, it's an old Greek philosopher's statement, I think, but I've heard it a few times. And you've got 2 ears and 1 mouth. Mm. So you should listen twice as much as you speak, right? And by listening, you learn, and then you will find commonalities across demographics that will help you to kind of map out initiatives that can make people feel that sense of belonging even more. In my mind is really what diversity and inclusion is about at its roots. It's about making the individuals feel like they have the best environment to succeed. So listen would be the key piece of advice.
Amazing. Yeah, I always feel that within corporations, the people that thrive are the ones that are able to bring their whole self to work as well. And I think one of the challenges that we face in women's health, that it's very hard to kind of relate to the issues that women go through, because it's a very different experience. I know that you have recently tried the MenoVest, and I heard a little birdie tell me that you've also tried a period simulator. Just to clarify, a MenoVest is a vest that men wear that kind of randomly starts to heat up to simulate hot flushes. So it's not a menopause simulator because there's like 50 different symptoms, but it's a hot flush simulator to at least have an opportunity for men to experience some of the discomfort that women face. Can you share a little bit your experience, and how do you think using these kind of innovations can help and create a better understanding of women's health?
Sure. So I haven't tried a period pain simulator, but I would like to.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm on it.
Anytime. But the MenoVest simulation was brilliant. And I mean that from the experiential side of it. I think you hit the nail on the head, right? People have difficulty empathizing or understanding the issues that other people go through. And by other, I mean men understanding women, white people understanding different race, etc. You can't understand those experiences fully. So any initiative that can aid the understanding just works wonders. Mm. And the MenoVest trial was really powerful for me. So three of us sat in panel on a stage in front of a large group of predominantly women, trying to talk eruditely about allyship and what we were trying to do in our organizations around menopause. Having to do that whilst experiencing the hot flushes was very, very hard. You're constantly kind of repositioning to feel comfortable and making sure you're not leaning against metal, which was conducting the heat, and you're looking at the other people to see if they're struggling as much as you are. It just really brings home and demonstrates the brain fog, the kind of confusion or the challenges that a woman who's going through it properly is likely to face. And even the simple idea that you can't fully concentrate on the question that's being asked because something else is happening, simulating that is really, really powerful. I think it has some brilliant use ideas. So I can't give a better way to really highlight menopause, for example, a cafe. Mm-hmm. When we run an event on our reception walkway where everybody passes every day, can't think of a better way of showing people the issues than getting somebody to sit and wear that vest for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant way to just bring it home. And the same would apply for period simulators.
Yeah.
It also helps to really break down some of the stereotypes around men, right? And improve the vulnerability and the honesty of mental health for men as well. So I think it has multiple uses, but it's so powerful. Any kind of experience that will really try and let people live the symptoms of an issue just work wonders and help demonstrate it.
What I was there and what I found really interesting is what typically happens to women when they go through a hot flush, you're trying to hide it. So you get very hot. So you try and put your arms together to show that you're not sweating. You're kind of trying to pretend nothing is wrong. So it really, the word stoic kind of comes to mind, where you're like, everything is okay, we're all fine, nothing's happening, because you're so embarrassed and there is not an environment or a culture where you can actually talk and explain what's actually happening. And I thought that was so interesting, because as you were all trying to do your own thing, for me, the biggest picture was how all stoic you were. Like, okay, let people not notice that we're actually really, really, really struggling. So big, big kudos to all of you for trying that and for advocating for more empathy in this space. Well, Chris, I know you are a super, super busy man, and I'm so grateful we managed to squeeze in half an hour to talk about this. Just one final question to any kind of corporate HR manager or leader that is listening. In order to start your women's health journey, what would you tell them?
So I think if you're starting from scratch, I would try and get some kind of a focus group together to get people into a safe space to talk about the issues that are really concerning to them. That doesn't necessarily need to be in the workplace as well, right? It can be at home. Mm-hmm. It's really just trying to understand the base issues that are going to affect women's health and how they work in the workplace. And then from that, try and develop the solutions to make those experiences easier and better. A lot of the pressure in the corporate world comes from needing to show a benefit to the initiative that you're pursuing. And that can be very hard when it's something as intangible as providing period products for women, right? But the benefits are there. And there's a lot of literature out there that talks about monetary, loyalty, culture benefits in an organization from supporting women's health. So once you have an idea of where to go, you'll need to justify it. But the justifications are widely available. You then need to go on a journey of convincing decision makers to really embrace the change. But that everything starts with listening. Get people together and talk it through.
Well, I'm really hoping that all my listeners are going to enjoy as much as I did listening to your amazing story, your journeys, your insights. Thank you so much, Chris, for making the time to meet with me today. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and review and give me feedback so we can improve it as we go along. But thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.